from KQED.
Good morning. This is the California Report. I'm Saul Gonzalez. There is a major settlement announcement from utility giant PG&E this morning. The utility has reached an $11 billion settlement over insurance claims from the 2017 and 2018 wildfires. The California Report's Lily Jamali is standing by with more. Good morning, Lily. How significant is this deal?
Hi, Saul. It's significant. This deal is primarily with insurance companies over fire claims they said were worth $20 billion. At $11 billion, this settlement is far less than that, but it's more than what PG&E was offering just a few days ago when it filed its plan to get out of bankruptcy with the judge overseeing that process. This is a big step for the utility. It's its second major settlement relating to these fires. Just a couple months back in June, PG&E secured a $1 billion settlement with 18 local governments, including the town of Paradise, which was badly damaged in last year's campfire. But important to note that what we're talking about today doesn't include individual wildfire survivor claims, including those who were not insured or were underinsured, and that this deal will need approval from the judge overseeing PG&E's bankruptcy. Saul?
Again, that was the California Report's Lily Jamali. Let's turn now to the aftermath of a recent tragedy. The National Transportation Safety Board released a preliminary report Thursday on the fire that sank the dive boat Conception off the Santa Barbara coast. While the report didn't identify the cause of the fire, it did provide new information about the crew. KCRW's Matt Gillum has details.
The initial report from the NTSB is short, just two pages. In it, the agency lays out what happened in the early morning hours of September 2nd when the Conception burned, leaving 34 people dead, including one crew member. According to the NTSB, every member of the crew was asleep when the fire broke out. Federal law requires ships to have at least one night watchman awake who could alert others to danger and prevent the kind of incident that brought down the ship. This report comes very early in the investigation, says James Hall, a former chairman of the NTSB.
This is just gathering the facts.
Hall says the trove of information will come once authorities actually examine the boat.
We won't know until the vessel is brought up what it may tell us, but I have been part of hundreds of investigations, and having the vessel has provided information that has led you to a successful conclusion.
A barge off the Channel Islands pulled the Conception to the surface Thursday afternoon. It'll be taken ashore for inspection. For the California Report, I'm Matt Gillum in Santa Barbara.
The clock is quickly ticking down in Sacramento because today is the last day of the California legislative year. And what a year it's been, with some landmark pieces of legislation passed, especially in just the last few days. I talked about legislative happenings in the state capitol with Katie Orr of KQED's Politics and Government Desk.
Hi, Saul.
So what are some of the most important pieces of legislation that came out of the legislature this year?
Well, I think one of the major pieces is AB 5, which will reclassify who can be considered a contractor in California versus an employee. That's going to have ramifications for a ton of businesses, and it's something that we'll likely be dealing with for many years to come. There was also a pretty big vaccine bill that limited medical exemptions for school kids. In 2015, California eliminated the personal belief exemption and said the only way you can go to school without having your vaccines is through a medical exemption. This would further limit that and give the state more oversight on those medical exemptions. It's something that has been pretty bitterly fought by people who are opposed to mandatory vaccinations. And in fact, the opposition has announced they're going to try and get a referendum on the ballot next year to possibly overturn this law. We also had a big rent cap bill go through the Assembly and the Senate here that would limit rent increases to 5% a year plus inflation for older buildings.
And just to be clear, the governor has either already signed these bills into law or said he would, right?
Right. The governor absolutely, he acted on the vaccine bills bill pretty quickly. And I say bills because there was a follow-up bill that made some late changes that he had wanted to see. And he signed those the day they passed the legislature, in part because it was such an acrimonious debate. Opponents of these bills had been filling the halls of the Capitol and actually chanted so much they disrupted a session for about 2 hours on Monday. As far as AB5 and the rent control bill, those are bills that do have the governor's support, and it's likely he will sign them.
Katie Orr, this has all been so fascinating. Thank you very much for being our Sherpa through the ways of Sacramento and the legislative process. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Again, that was KQED's Katie Orr. Let's turn now to immigration policy. The U.S. Supreme Court has upheld the right of the Trump administration to stop most migrants, many of whom are from Central America, from seeking asylum in the United States. And that's going to affect thousands of migrants in Tijuana who want to cross the border and have their asylum petitions heard by U.S. authorities. KPBS's Max Rivlin-Nadler went to the border city to hear what some migrants are saying.
For the past 2 years, migrants from almost every part of the world have waited months in Tijuana for their chance to apply for asylum in the U.S. Many, like 23-year-old Anthony Pinera, have traveled from El Salvador. Pinera crossed through two other countries to escape gang violence. Under the new Trump administration rule, this would make him ineligible for asylum unless he applied and failed to get protection in either of those two countries first. Others have come from even further. 33-year-old Alford, who didn't want to use his last name for safety reasons, traveled through at least 12 countries to get to Tijuana from Cameroon. He says he was escaping political oppression.
I passed through Cote d'Ivoire, Benin, that's Cotonou, Ethiopia, Brazil, Peru.
He believes he has no choice but to continue to try to get into the U.S.
I will still have to try. I'll try. Because I think where I have to, like the U.S. is the most safest place for me.
Alford thinks the new rule doesn't live up to what he's heard about America. Litigation over the new asylum policy is expected to stretch into next year, possibly to the next presidential term. But for now, people like Alford and Anthony Pinera will have to prove that another country wouldn't let them stay. For the California Report, I'm Max Rivlin-Nadler in Tijuana.
When it comes to gender transitioning, most people focus on what they see, not what they hear. But transitioning can have an effect on the voice. One professional opera singer went from sounding like this to this. Reporter Chloe Veltman from KQED has an in-depth story coming out later today on our sister show, The California Report Magazine, about how three professional California opera singers, who all happen to be transgender, navigated their changing voices, both professionally and personally. She joins me now to talk about some of the science behind all of this. Hey, Chloe.
Hi there, Saul.
So tell us about that striking vocal transition we just heard. How did that singer go about changing his voice so dramatically?
Well, Saul, that's Elliot Franks, who is now a baritone. Now, he used to sing soprano and mezzo-soprano roles professionally, and he decided at the age of 50 to start taking testosterone, which lowered his voice. Now, testosterone is the primary male hormone. It has the effect of thickening the vocal folds when you take it.
And how predictable are the outcomes of taking testosterone on the voice? Do they know what exactly will happen?
Well, no one knows what will happen. That's the problem. It's a huge risk, as people who listen to my piece later on today will find out. University of California speech pathologist Sarah Schneider said the process typically takes about a year or two, and it can be very disorienting.
Some people describe it as feeling locked in. They're not quite sure how to navigate the lower voice.
And Chloe, is it the same deal for people transitioning to a higher pitched voice?
Actually, it's a completely different story for people taking estrogen. So unlike taking testosterone, female hormones have no effect on the voice at all. So the most popular way to speak or sing higher is to train your voice to do that.
And what about surgery?
Surgery for the vocal folds exists, but that is kind of a drastic measure because the outcomes are wildly unpredictable.
And Chloe, what can people going through a major vocal transition do to keep their voices healthy?
Well, Sarah Schneider, the speech pathologist, says it's best to keep using your voice all the way through transition, no matter if it feels foreign or creaky or strange to you. People should think of it like they're working out any muscle at the gym, But Sarah also said it's best not to push too hard because you don't want to damage your vocal apparatus.
This is all so fascinating. KQED's Chloe Veltman, thanks so much.
You're very welcome, Saul.
You can hear Chloe's full documentary on the California Report magazine podcast. And finally, does anyone really like going to the airport? Especially San Francisco International in recent days because of runway construction. That's led to the delay or cancellation of nearly 2,000 flights this month and a lot of exasperated passengers in the terminals. Well, here's some good news. The construction is going faster than expected, so the work is going to wrap up 2 days early. Everything should be back to normal, or as close to normal as things get at SFO, by Wednesday, September 25th. The bad news? That's still nearly 2 weeks away. But there's a great airport in Oakland. And that's the California Report for Friday, September 13th, a production of KQED Public Radio. Our engineers are Danny Bringer, Katie McMurrin, Rob Spate, with additional engineering from Seal Muller. The rest of the staff include Kathleen Quillian, Michelle Wiley, Raquel Maria Dillon, and Polly Stryker. Our managing editor is Vidi Tong, our executive editor is Ethan Lindsay, and our chief content officer is Holly Kernan. I'm Saul Gonzalez in Los Angeles. Have a great day.
Support for the California Report comes from Earth Justice, taking big polluters and the government to court, no matter who's in office. Earth Justice, because the earth needs a good lawyer. Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems. And the California Healthcare Foundation, helping low-income Californians get the healthcare they need, on the web at chcf.org.